Drupal Voices is a series of interviews with people contributing to the Drupal community. Brought to you by Lullabot Consulting. Whether you need technical architecture, developer support, optimization and analysis, on-site training, or just general guidance for your Drupal project, Lullabot has led many of the largest Drupal projects in the world. Visit lullabot.com or call 877-LULLABOT to find out how we can help you with your next project.
My name is Seth Brown. I'm a project manager with Lullabot. And beyond project management, I also do a lot of sales work and account management for Lullabot, which is actually really handy because I get to help qualify our clients and find the right fit for Lullabot, but also, you know, ensure the right fit for the client. You know, Lullabot is as concerned with being a good fit for the clients that we take on as we are with them being a good fit for us. And so, yeah, our qualification process, I use an acronym NATM, and we've sort of tacked C onto it lately, but NATM is need, authority, time frame, and money. And so need is the most nebulous of those five criteria, but you know, the notion is, are they looking for something that's really going to serve the company or the entity well? You know, is it a legitimate need? How urgent a need is it? Is it a need in the community and in sort of the broader universe? We really look at sort of need from all those different dimensions. Authority, you want to be able to make sure that you're dealing with somebody who has the authority to make decisions on behalf of the entity or organization that you're negotiating with. And then time frame is the timeline. You know, does it work? We're often kind of booked. It seems like everybody wants their project to start tomorrow. And that's hard to do most of the time if you're a good company, because if you're a good company, you're probably already committed to clients for a certain period of time. And so we often have to say, you know, we're not available till, you know, the fall of 2011 or something. So you want to make sure timeline is a fit right off the back, you know, because that can be sort of a conversation killer and save everyone a bunch of time if the timelines just don't match. Money, obviously, you know, can you afford the project? Does it make financial sense for both parties? That kind of thing. I remember when I worked at Blue Tent before I came to Lullabot, you know, we'd occasionally get clients from nonprofits or smaller organizations that really, really wanted to work with Blue Tent, but it was a little out of their reach, and they would start talking about things like, you know, selling their prize horse or something like that to get a website. And we would often say, you know, that's probably not a fit because, you know, you really want both organizations to be matched for each other. Otherwise, the client can feel underserved or like they're not getting the proper attention, or the organization can feel like it's, you know, a ripoff or that kind of thing. So you want to avoid that. So you look for the matches on those terms. And then culture is the other one that's become increasingly important to us. We're looking for a cultural match between our organization and the organization we're going to be working with. You know, do we all get along? Could we all hang out at a field museum cocktail party at DrupalCon and have a good time? And hopefully the answer to that is yes, and we try to test that as well. Also, you know, we're a very sort of flat culture at Lullabot. You know, we like to work with flat organizations that aren't super hierarchical, you know, that don't have big bureaucratic hoops you have to jump through in order to talk to the people that you need to talk to. This sounds kind of crazy because everybody sort of probably thinks they're nice, but we're very nice people, and we look for correspondingly nice people. We're not looking for real cutthroat or get out there and slay them, kill them kind of clients, you know? That kind of energy is not really our energy, and so we try to make sure there's a match there for that.
And so there was a session here at DrupalCon about project management, and so maybe talk a bit about like that panel that was convened and what was sort of the big messages that you thought kind of came out of that discussion.
Sure, it was kind of all over the place, as panels often are. We did only audience questions. We fielded audience questions on project management. And there were a lot of questions, actually, interestingly enough, about certification. People were interested in sort of what we look for when we're hiring. And we mentioned both Scrum Master certification and PMP certification as being really useful. But in the end, you know, I think everyone sort of agreed that experience is more important. And we often look for people coming out of smaller shops that have been in situations where they've had to manage way more than one or two projects at a time, like we do at the enterprise level. You know, maybe they had to manage, like I did at Blue Tent, you know, 60 projects a year. And there's an incredible amount of experience with the sort of rainbow of human personalities that you get when you have to manage that many projects that's really hard to replicate with any kind of academic training. So that's one thing we look for. And then the other thing we all mentioned was writing skills. You know, we really are looking for good writers because you do a lot of documentation in project management. And it's pretty important that whoever you hire be a good communicator, and almost more important than whether they have a PMP or a Scrum Master cert, because those things can be taught. Being a great writer, not so much. So yeah, that came up. There were a lot of questions. There were some group therapy questions, as Amy Scarvata likes to call them, you know, where people come up and say, I have this problem with so-and-so, and we answered a few of those. One of the interesting questions that came up was asking each of us what our worst day on the job was, you know. And for me, I remember very clearly having to do a presentation back when I worked at Blue Tent Marketing for a large client for us at the time, studenthousing.org. And I basically went into the presentation, as I often went into presentations at that time, because I was so busy, and just sort of started showing, and here's this, and here's what we did here, and here's, and you start realizing there's all these regression bugs that have popped up again, you know, that the client wanted fixed, or you run into things and you have to sort of say, well, this should work like that. Picture this working, you know, a certain way. And, you know, my answer to that was, I think it's really important to use macros, to use Selenium IDE. We've started doing that a lot, and actually go through your presentation before you give it. And all that code monkey, QA monkey clicking that you do can actually be recorded as a macro and then saved, so you can replay those. And I've, you know, for a project, I'll have macros for all of the main forms and other things that need to be tested every time, you know, new code is rolled out. The other thing is I'll actually go through and record tickets on video. I use iShowUHD to create screencasts for tickets, and then I'll attach those to an Unfuddle ticket. And it's a great way to show your developers not just what the bug is, but how you got there and how you replicated it. Same thing with Selenium IDE, you can actually record your clicking around, and you can export that as XML, and then you can attach it to the ticket and your developer can replay it. So, but the biggest thing is, for doing those big presentations, I'll actually record it as a screencast that I'll probably never show to anybody but myself, but I'll go through the whole thing. And there's something about being on a screencast and forcing yourself into that discipline. You're conscious of time as an element. You don't want it to be too long. You start to get the points where you can make a joke, and you get to, you know, you almost, it's nice. You end up having a much better presentation in the end for it. And it's a great way to surface issues too. You know, it's a great way to do QA.
And so you've done project management in both a co-located physical meeting place in your offices, and you've also done a lot of project management in virtual company, which is, Lullabot doesn't have a centralized office. It's people sort of spread out all over the United States and Canada. So talk a bit about like some of the lessons that you've learned in how to PM a virtual team.
Oh, that's a great question. Some of the things that are typically associated with Scrum, like all sitting around a table, you know, divvying up paper clips for story points and putting them on note cards, which are your user stories, and then putting those note cards with those story points, you know, on a nice huge board that everybody can see, and then, you know, moving it through the different columns on that board, you know, as you go from into production with those user stories. A lot of that stuff becomes harder to do, you know, and there's things like Jira software applications that try to replicate Agile, things like Scrummy. But my experience is that some of the Agile stuff doesn't really work in the virtual environment as well as it would in a human environment. And what's a better word for that? A physical, when you're actually physically co-located, a lot of those things are easier. I feel like you need to have much more emphasis on documentation, written documentation when you're virtual. So you end up writing a lot of notebooks. We do use user stories, and we'll create those as Unfuddle messages for each sprint milestone. And then the sprint itself will have all the tickets associated with those user stories. And the user stories are sort of the guiding document for that sprint, and then they also become the test plan for that sprint. But there's something, you know, you lose in the fact that they're not, you know, awesome note cards on a cool board that everyone can come see. And, you know, not everyone walks by the burn down chart on their way to the water cooler and can see that stuff. So some of the neat touchy-feely stuff about Agile is definitely harder to do virtually.
And there seems to also be some trade-offs in terms of having a project that may be a fixed bid or a fixed, you know, fixed budget, a fixed timeline, and trying to use like Agile processes, and that may not sort of go together and well. So talk a bit about sort of the trade-offs that you've found in terms of like Agile works in this situation but not in this situation, and sort of like the other contractual things that are coming from maybe the sales and business side that are kind of affecting the project management of a project.
Yeah, totally. Everybody wants to do Agile, but nobody wants to buy Agile. Like, no business wants to say, yeah, we'll just buy a bunch of hours from you and whatever we get done, great, you know, and, you know, no worries, we'll let you prioritize it and everything. It's almost impossible, or it's very difficult to sell that unless there's a really strong culture of Agile already in the client organization. So yeah, most of the time we end up having to do fixed bids. What we do at Lullabot is we use a technique in the project management community is geekily referred to as wideband Delphi estimation. But the notion is basically, you look at a project, you come up with a product backlog for the project, and you make it as granular as possible. You try to break it down almost to a task level, certainly to a level of granularity that's estimable, you know, where an engineer can look at that chunk of work and say, yeah, that's, you know, going to take me 8 hours, or that's going to take me 24 hours, or that's going to take me, you know, 100 hours. When you start getting into those 100-hour numbers, you haven't broken it down well enough, and you need to go back and break that down more. So once we have a sort of product backlog, the next thing we'll do is we'll have each of the engineers separately go off and bid the same tasks. And then we come back, we put those all together in a spreadsheet. Usually three people do the bidding exercise. Once we have the spreadsheet, what we're looking for is extreme variance in the estimations. And we have a meeting subsequent to the estimation period where we go to each line where there's a huge gap between what one engineer thinks it's going to take and what another engineer thinks it's going to take. And we say, what were the assumptions here? What were your assumptions, Kent, or what were your assumptions, Dave, about, you know, these tasks? Why did you think it was 100 hours? Why did you think it was 8 hours? That kind of thing. And we usually come out of that and do a second round of estimation after those assumptions have been ferreted out. And once we've done both of those rounds, we actually usually end up seeing that everybody's guesses on things are really, really close. Then we'll go back to the organization and say, you know, okay, this is the best we can do at a fixed bid, and it's usually a pretty good fixed bid. And then it's a matter of, if you are going to a fixed bid project, controlling the client and making sure they know when something is out of scope, or, you know, and hopefully you have this clear guiding document. Most of the time, what I end up seeing happening is at some point, usually late in the project, that document gets scrapped, right? This is the whole reason Agile was created, was because everyone realized that you can't really predict the future, you can't make the perfect plan, the needs of a company change, companies need to adapt, you know, we're all moving at internet time. And usually what happens when that happens is we will switch to Scrum, we'll switch to Agile, and we'll say, okay, you know what, we'll have a product backlog, we can add things and take things away from that. We're gonna let you prioritize, you know, what you want to get into each sprint, and then we're gonna do our best. And usually when that happens, the client has already gained enough trust in Lullabot through working with us for a period of time that they're no longer scared of that. It was one thing when we were first meeting each other and, you know, we're sort of dating and they don't know if you're a serial killer or not. And after you've been dating for a while, they say, wow, we really trust you guys. And so now we're willing to switch to Agile. So oftentimes, you know, we'll take the hours that are left in the project, you know, we'll figure that out and we'll say, okay, these are the hours left in the fixed bid project. And we'll sort of commit that into an Agile pool and we'll start doing sprints. And that happened on a recent project that we can't talk about yet, but that's coming out soon. Hopefully it'll be out by the time you're hearing this.
Cool. And finally, maybe you could just talk a bit about, you know, doing project management on many different smaller projects and moving towards, you know, Lullabot as a company is working with a lot fewer clients, but like really huge enterprise projects. What sort of like lessons or changes did you, or insights did you have along the way?
One of the biggest changes for me that was actually a difficult change was when I worked on 30 to 40 smaller projects, I was a developer as well as a project manager. So I would often come in and particularly with theming, I would do a lot of the theming work. And being sort of a, you know, graphic design-y kind of guy, I had a good eye for when we weren't, you know, on target with the theme, when something was off. And those are kind of the bugs that are often the most annoying to the client, especially on smaller projects where you're doing brochure sites, you know, the thing they care about the most is how it looks. And so it was really easy to be able to have the developers kind of rough it out and then as the PM come in and, you know, kind of clean it up. When I came to Lullabot, those technical skills from having been a developer and a themer really came in handy in terms of writing good tickets and writing good documentation. But one of the things I found is that at Lullabot, it's not really feasible for me to develop on the projects that I'm managing on a project like Martha Stewart. Like, it's so complex. even getting your local set up, you know, and having your VPN access and your dev slice and, you know, all of the different databases that you have to switch between while you're working on that dev slice, you know, is over my head, or at least over the amount of time that I was able to commit to putting into it just to make a tweak here or a tweak there. And that's been really hard for me. I think it's a great background for a PM to have been a developer, almost maybe better than having gone to project management school, because it's going to allow the dev to speak to their team, to understand what they're going through, to describe tasks in a way that the developers can understand, and then to translate for the client when the developers are sort of, you know, talking in geek speak. So that was one big change for me. And the other thing is, in some ways, bigger projects are a lot saner when there really isn't a great way to juggle 10 projects at a time. You know, something is getting the short end of the stick. And it's an honor and a privilege to be able to work on, you know, one great project at a time, because you can give it your all and really feel like you're having a positive impact. And it's not like being back in high school where if you do your English homework, you don't do your calculus homework and you feel really bad about it. So that's sort of the nice side of it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken.